Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Had to go extra long because guess what, folks? It's game week. I know you're excited. I'm excited. You are now talking with TD. I got Elijah Campbell hitting the switches, making things happen. And my, oh my. We have a great show for you today. We're going to have Stephen Whitehead of Elite Athletics Training. He's a guy who worked a lot with Jadeveon Clowney this offseason. We got Jeff Legwold. Yes, folks, each and every week, I am going to tap into my NFL Nation Black Book and dial up the NFL, ESPN NFL Nation reporter from the team that the Titans are facing. We're going to start it off with the one, the only Jeff Legwold. My guy, one of the OGs in this business. So we're going to start off with that. But before we do, my goodness, my goodness.
Did something happen this weekend?
Man, you know what? Titans fans, they get Christmas a little early. They, you know, that night before, you know, you go to sleep and you're like, man, I just wish tomorrow would just come. Titans fans have been doing that since March. But tomorrow came. Christmas Day came. You unwrapped the gift and voila, a number 99 with dreads popped up. Jadeveon Clowney is a Tennessee Titan. Boy, that's in practice on Wednesday. You talk about energy. I mean, there was, and it's funny because that's how it was the first day of camp. And then it just dwindled down to the regulars and, you know what? Everybody was back out again. And Clowney, it was all eyes on Clowney. Vic Beasley was there, by the way, too. But he worked on a separate field with Mike Vrabel and then went off when it went to the next portion. But, man, that addition of Clowney is huge for this defense. And I actually drew up for Whiteboard Wednesdays, the one on ESPN.com, the Titans page. I went into a little bit how the stunts are going to work. And that's just one thing that he brings to the table, right? Jeffrey Simmons, you got Jeffrey Simmons and Clowney on TE stunts, man. That's going to be a problem. I mean, a problem for offensive linemen. Stunts are difficult as it is, but when you have two guys that are as gifted as Clowney and Simmons, that's even worse. And you'll actually see, I drew it up to where Evans could be a factor in that too. So definitely make sure you check that out on ESPN.com. But, man, when you look at Clowney, it, just the impact that he brings. Another thing that I have to mention is just kind of thinking back to practice on Wednesday. Throughout practice, initially during individual period, he was working with Shane Bowen. They were just, you know, one-on-one working on technique. Then he went back with the rest of the group, and Shane Bowen went over a technique, and a couple of the guys executed it. Then Clowney did, but then he turned back around to Kamale Correa and Harold Landry, and he kind of instructed them and added a few things. He put a Euro step to the drill. He hit him with a little Euro step like in basketball and just showed them how to incorporate that into rushing the passer. And that's just an added value that no one really has seen because we haven't seen Clowney practice. But in one practice period, and then right before they went over to special teams when individual period was over, the last, like, minute or so, Clowney and Harold Landry, one-on-one, just working. And the thing that's so positive about that is it goes back to something that I remember when we had Chuck Smith on the Chase and TD show from last year. I asked him about just the pass rush for Harold Landry and getting better, and he actually said that it's always a plus when you have a guy there. Like, you can watch all the video you want, but unless you have someone there to help establish that pass rushing culture, you're not really going to see a lot of guys excel and elevate to elite status. Clowney is a guy that can help establish that pass rushing culture. So that's a huge thing. You look at pass block win rate, two and a half seconds. I mean, the guy was among the top at that. You look at how he absorbs double teams. You look at just go back to 2017. Go back to that and watch the Texans film. And I posted a couple videos on Twitter using animation because, you know, you're not really supposed to use an excessive amount of NFL video. You know what I mean? I follow the rules. But I posted that just using animation. And one of the things that really stands out about Clowney in that season, this dude played left and right outside linebacker, left and right defensive end, and he played defensive tackle. He played middle linebacker. You saw him all over the place. And that's something, scheme versatility. And it was Paul Kaharsky. Shout out to Paul because he asked Mike Vrabel about that and just reminded him of what he said about how that front is going to have, you know, scheme diversity, multiplicity. Clowney gives you just that. So there's a lot that Titans fans need to be excited for. I know. Three sacks. Okay. Yeah, that's great. I just direct you to the Green Bay Packers outside linebackers coach, the video. Search it on YouTube. Do yourself a favor and watch that because he gets into how sacks are such a miscommunication when it comes to evaluating pass rushers. I mean, it's great to get sacks. The objective is to impact the quarterback. You could impact the quarterback without getting sacks. Jadeveon Clowney, when you look at pressures, when you look at, you know, just what he brings to the table, he is absolutely great for the Titans defense. I think he's the piece that could kind of push them over the edge. And the thing that you have to look at is the impact on other players. I mentioned Jeffrey Simmons. I mentioned Harold Landry, even Kamale Correa, a younger guy like Derek Roberson, you know, who didn't practice on Wednesday. You know, that's another guy that benefits. Vic Beasley also. Clowney pulls the attention away and the onus on being that guy away from Landry and Beasley, who both I think are good players, but I think they're more built to be the accessory to the crime as opposed to the actual trigger man. You know, if you will allow me to use that analogy. That's how I look at it. But I did all that. I didn't even talk about how the dude plays against the run.
And that might be his best attribute.
Basically, run stuffs. He's not, since 2016, no one has more run stuffs, according to ESPN Stats and Info, than Jadeveon Clowney. And run stuffs, we're talking about zero or a loss. Zero gain or a loss. That's pretty good when it comes to putting teams into third and long type situations. And then that's when you could bring in Beasley and Landry and have Clowney and just say, hey, look, fellas, go get him. That's basically what you could say. But there's just a lot in place for this Titans defense to really benefit from having a guy like Jadeveon Clowney. Oh, and I'm going to add something because this week they are facing the Denver Broncos, who they have a rookie at center, Cushenberry. They have a guy who has, I don't believe he's made any starts, Elijah Wilkinson, after Juwan James opted out. That offensive line is ripe for the picking. And that's not to take anything away from Cushenberry, LSU product, very good. Wilkerson, he's been in the league, so, you know, you got to respect that. But I just think when you have elites like Clowney, a borderline and a ascending player in Landry, and a guy who has something to prove in Beasley, I think you're in good shape. And, oh, Jeffrey Simmons going against a rookie tackle. Hey, listen, man.
Feast week.
It's not the SEC. Much respect to the SEC, but this is a different ball game. So there are a lot of things when you fast forward to this week against the Broncos. There are a lot of things that I think will work in the Titans' favor. But end of the day, right, it could look as good and beautiful as possible. You still got to go out there and play the game. There are things that you have to be concerned about. So we'll definitely look at all that. Mike Vrabel said he's going to look at how Clowney is this week, and depending on how he is, that will determine the snap count or how much involved he's going to be. I think he's ready. We're going to go next, after we come back from the break, to a guy who can actually give us a better idea on whether or not Clowney's ready. And this is someone who has worked with Clowney during the offseason. He also has trained multiple NFL wide receivers. He has a pretty good collection of folks that he's worked with. So we're going to go to a break. Before we do, you know what you have to do. Search Talking with TD, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes. I need you to search. When you find us, subscribe, rate, review, 5 stars, please. We appreciate it. And we'll be right back.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
Sip the juice. I got enough to go around. And the thought takes place uptown.
All right, all right, all right. Back from the break, as promised. We talked a little bit about Clowney in the opening, so you know what? We placed the table for this one right here. We got my guy, Steve Whitehead, man. This is one of the top trainers in the league. I hooked up with Steve back in Philly. I remember, you know, he was working with Alshon Jeffrey, and a lot of things changed for Alshon as far as the soft tissue injuries, and this is the reason why. So I appreciate Steve coming on. What's up, man?
Nothing much, man. Thank you for having me. Blessed day to be here.
Yeah.
For a while, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, for sure, man. I know you're in Washington, you know, and I'm sure you'll be this way in a bit. We talked about that, and you're coming out here because you got to get things set up for your guy, man, Clowney. So let's get right into it. You worked with him for a good amount during this off season. What were the initial goals that you were trying to accomplish for him?
Well, the initial goal was just getting in and building a relationship and trust with him. Him being an elite type of athlete that he's been, and being the number one player in the nation and being the number one draft pick, you know, he's been surrounded with a lot of people that have expressed they can do things for him or want to get things out of him and not really there for his best interest. So the main thing for me was going in there and building rapport and building the trust with him and then figuring out what it is he wanted to achieve. And from that standpoint, we just figured out that he, you know, the long-term goal was, of course, for everybody was to create financial stability. But when we broke it down even further from what's in there through the questioning, you know, we found out that he wanted to be a Hall of Famer. And so from there, it just becomes easy to work backwards and hold him to that standard as we move forward in our training and our progression.
Now, what would you attribute? Because, I mean, listen, let's call a spade. He's had his share of injuries. So how would you categorize or attribute, you know, what has happened with him, especially when you have a guy that's such elite, you know, so athletic? Well, what's the deal with the injuries?
Well, it's kind of a league-wide thing. You touched on it by him being so elite that these guys are, you know, I don't want to say afraid to push themselves, but it's kind of where do you find the balance of turning that car on to go 100 miles per hour versus taking some time to recover and build your body back up. You know, the reality is this sector that I'm in was created into, and these guys have been forced to find independent trainers where they used to be in the gym with their strength and conditioning coach for a long period of time. But what has now happened is they now have to have the ability to outsource and find what's right for them. And most of the time they're just going with what their teammate or one of their college teammates or somebody they know is still training. So this realm of training has just become kind of a mediocre standard where if this guy's doing it, I'm doing it. And basically, if this guy's training, then the other guy will start training with him. They created kind of this standard where, you know, if the other guy's doing it, if Johnny's doing it, then I need to be doing it. And it's not necessarily what's best for them or the individual. And it's just kind of, you know, watered down the training process where they used to be able to get in with their strength and conditioning coach year-round and really hone in on their weaknesses and what's best for them in terms of their strength training, in terms of their speed training, and even in terms of their recovery. Now you have these guys getting outsourced to guys such as myself, and we only get them for a month, maybe 2 months. And so are we communicating with these strength conditioning coaches? Do we really know what's best for these guys, or are we just happy to have them and really just want to implement our plan and show that we're completely different than everybody else? So it just becomes kind of a murky water when you get into it and having these guys go find what's particularly right for them. It's kind of hard.
And your company, Elite Athletic Training, rightfully named, working with elite guys. Well, we talked before about Alshon and Jeffrey, that is, and some of the things that you did to, you know, restrict and limit the soft tissue injuries, and it ended up being successful, right? He went through all the 17, and he was good to go. Obviously, the shoulder was an issue. But with Clowney, what in that amount of time that you worked with him, what were some of the things that you did to try to get him in a condition where he could last a full season?
Well, you got to realize Clowney's kind of an old school guy. You know, he's a line him up, I'll whoop the guy across the other side from me. That's his mentality. And when you have that mentality failing to be coupled with the training that backs it up, it becomes hard. You know, these guys are high-risk players just because of how elite they are. And then you add that with them not training the way they need to be able to turn that engine on, it just leads to a lot of breakdown. If you just look at it from a car standpoint, you know, the tires start to get unraveled. You know, the lights start to go out a little bit. Everything starts to take place as a result of it. Of them just progressing too fast once they get on the field. So even like with Clowney right now, my biggest concern is that he's now getting back into football and he has to go back on the field right away. So hopefully we progress him well enough to be able to go out there and handle the load and demand that's going to be required of him.
What kind of shape was he in, you know, when you got him, you know, to this point where it's okay, go get him, go get on the field and do what you do?
Well, it's gotten to the point, you know, that the hard thing is I don't think really anybody across the league has gotten the opportunity to really prepare at its normal rate.
Right.
You see the number of injuries that are happening now, and I think they're only going to increase. But, you know, the consummate phrase is the only way to prepare for football is to play football.
Exactly.
And these guys have lost a lot of football due to the virus, and now they're just starting to man up and butt up, and they're only doing it against their teammates. So how hard are you actually going at that, too? So I have to protect you while as well as I'm protecting myself. And I'm anxious to see this weekend throughout the league what actually takes place in that regard and if these guys can really sustain it. You know, it's unfortunate that they've been put in this compromised situation, but that's the nature of the business, and we have to be able to adapt to it. So it's going to be, like I said, I'm real anxious to see how that takes part. But for him, it's just really making him aware of his body, of the situations that he puts himself in, knowing how he has to be able to take his recovery serious, knowing how he has to be able to take his mobility and flexibility serious, and not in the terms of just elongating your muscles, but putting yourself in positions that will turn the pain sensors off. So when you ever enter those positions, your body doesn't go into panic mode.
That's a great point. How do you do that? How do you put someone in those positions to where they don't go into panic mode and those pain sensors are off?
Man, it just actually has to go through isometrics. So the guy's just holding those positions, being in those uncomfortable, compromised positions, because you, as well as I know, the game of football doesn't have anything that happens in coordination. It's all chaotic. It's all reactive. So you never know how you're going to end up. So we just go and put ourselves in positions that can end up putting us in compromised positions on the field, because if you're doing it with your body weight and you're struggling, what's going to happen when you add an external load?
What about his strength? Because that's the thing. And seeing him, I saw him in the locker room when the Eagles and Texans played. I had to cover the Texans, and I went in there and I saw him. And I'm like, you know, this guy doesn't look like what I would think such a top-level edge defender would look like, whereas he's like very lean, he's wiry. Like, you look at him, you say, oh, wow, that's like a big receiver or a tight end.
Yeah,
so his,
looks like a big safety.
Yeah, like, it's crazy. So with his strength, like, how does all that work? I mean, that's what I'm really curious about.
That's where the phrase country strong comes into play.
And you got to say it's strong.
Strong. So he's, you know, because that was the thing. We didn't work much in the weight room. He said he can turn that on in 2 weeks and put on weight and gain that in a quick amount of time. You know, my thing was getting him back to becoming an athlete. As these guys become professionals, they just stay in their lane of what they're doing and very specific with that. Mm-hmm. But if we just get back to being movement oriented and being dynamic, we can then turn on some of those attributes that were once there that we've been limiting.
What was his work ethic like? Because, I mean, his play, he plays with a relentless attitude, so I would imagine he approaches his workouts that way.
Well, you know, that was kind of the quandary that I was in. You know, you hear of him and his work ethic outside of the field. And, you know, it was kind of where it was up in the air for me was is just getting him to buy in. I think once I got him to buy in and he started to catch his wind, it was very funny because then I told him after our last week of working out, I said, you notice when we first started working out, you know, I had to push the pace for him. You know, I had to get him up. I had to tell him, let's go. Let's keep going and let's move to the next drill. And he would try to talk as all of them do and buy time in between and do those type of things. Well, by the time that we got to the end, he was telling me, let's go. I'm ready for the next one. You know, and that's where the evolution had evolved and it changed for him to where now he's dictating the pace as opposed to allowing somebody else to dictate the pace. And we talked about it. A lot of the things that he ends up happening to him as far as injuries, as far as the penalties that he has, are a result of him being tired. And so we have to understand that we have to be able to push through that consistently and constantly to be able to be at our max potential.
Was there any workaround or approach? Like, how did you have to deal with the core injury that he was recovering from?
Oh, he was perfect from that. There was no residual effect from that. Of course, when you have surgery, it's never going to be 100% the same.
Right.
The beauty of it is that he's had other surgeries that were worse. So when you have other surgeries that are worse, something less than that doesn't even seem like anything. It's just a blimp on the radar and move on to the next thing.
So the deal is signed and he's on his way to Nashville. He's here now. How does that affect you? Like, what is it that you have to do to get him situated so that way he could carry on what it is that you have worked with him on?
Well, number one is my plan is to get there at least once a week, preferably on his off day, and do some of that mobility work that we were speaking of. But right now it's getting him the massage therapist that I have flying into him next week as soon as the game over to get him recovered from this week that his body's going to have the load that he's going to have placed upon him and getting him back in routine as quick as possible so he can adjust and adapt and be the best that he can be and get to that level that he says he wants to get to.
Do you get involved at all with any of the diet side of things, or is that something that I know he has his chef? Is that something that's pretty much on that side?
So the chef is, I brought the chef in from, me and the chef went to high school together.
Okay.
So I ended up bringing in the chef. We actually have a separate company called ProTrusted, and ProTrusted is essentially a concierge service where we provide these services for the guys, whether it be in massage therapy, culinary, yoga, PTs, whatever they're looking for. We have a network of people that we send these guys to and we want to surround them with so they don't have to make those decisions and it just makes life easy for them.
So EAT is a part of the full suite. Where can people find out about what it is that you're doing? You know, if they have it, I mean, there are players that listen to this, so go ahead and let them know how they could get into what you're doing.
Yeah, so you can reach us at Instagram at Elite Athletics Training, or you can go to our ProTrusted page. We're kind of dormant right now as far as building it up and getting this out, but Clowning doing what he's doing, he's kind of accelerated the process. And so we're just we're making waves, and anybody that wants to know what we do, just contact us via Instagram, and we'll be willing to reach out and help in any way and manner that we can.
And ladies and gentlemen, he played the game as well. You know, Steve was a wide. Listen, this is just something about receivers, man. I always seem to connect with other receivers, but you know, you played the position, you played it professionally, and you did well there. So we have to shout that out. And one other thing I have to say, you have the youngest elite athlete that I've seen, and little Kai Willie, man, his workouts are unbelievable.
Yeah, man, he's that's my future, and that's what I tell all the guys. You know, if they don't want to get with it and buy in and get with the business, I can go spend my time with my son because I got a future millionaire right there.
How old is he?
He's 7, man.
7 years old with a six pack, traps, a chest. Biceps, you know, it's so funny, man. I'm laughing because I'm thinking of the videos. And, yeah, man, good job with him, man. I definitely had to shout you out on that.
I appreciate that big time. Means more than you'll ever know.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, when you come to town, you know what it is, man. We'll definitely link up.
Yes, sir. I'll be there.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, man.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Yeah. Fresh. That's right. You hear the music. It's that time of the week. Run TMC. I got my hitter on my right side, Chris Sanders. Chris, what's going on?
Man, what's good, man? Man, every time I hear that song, I just want to rap, man. Can I rap for like 2 seconds?
Go ahead, man. Let me feel you flow.
I know I'm getting down because it's not about me. It's all about the show, Run TMC.
Ah, how about that? Just a few bars for you. You know what
I'm
saying?
Bars.
Just a couple.
But
just
I'm not a rapper.
Couple. Hey, listen. You know what Will Smith said back in the day? Jazzy Jeff.
Yo,
he's the rapper.
That.
I'm the DJ.
Dude, I'm going to tell you something. That was my album. That's what's up, man. We tag team. We like Batman and Robin, dog. Let's roll with this.
That's it, man. We got Elijah here, too, to make things happen. I want to get into the running game, obviously, because that's what this segment is devoted to. And first things first, you look at what the Broncos have in their stable, right? Philip Lindsay, Melvin Gordon, they added him. How do you think that rushing attack is going to look?
Man, it's going to be a two-headed monster. And, you know, I've been hearing in camp that they've been splitting a lot of reps, so they're going to make some plays. I mean, you got two speedy backs. I mean, have we ever seen this in the NFL in a while where you have two backs that are really, really fast, that are two home run hitters? So even though, you know, a couple of years ago with the Tennessee Titans when they had the two backs with Henry and I forget, what's my man's
DeMarco,
name? DeMarco. Yeah. They were like just power guys. But have you ever had a team – where you had two backs that can take it the distance, I mean, that can be a problem for any defense.
And that's the thing that really stands out to me because when I think of Melvin Gordon,
he's a dog.
I think a home run hitter, that long speed, because that's what he has, man. That guy is 100%. I'm just curious how that's going to work for this tandem because, you know, do you think both of these guys are equipped to be able to have effectiveness getting 10 to 15 carries per game?
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. I mean, it all depends on the personnel. I mean, if you go 20 personnel, two backs, zero tight ends, two backs, zero tight ends, and three wide receivers, you're putting both of those guys in the game so they can actually make plays. So if you have those guys in the game at the same time and they each have 15, 16, 17 carries, who are you going to keep your eyes on? So I just definitely think, man, this running game is scary. I mean, if you look at back in the day when they had Terrell Davis wasn't a home run hitter, but he was hitting those creases.
Yeah.
Just imagine if these two running backs that we're talking about now get any kind of crease, hey, you might as well put the baby to bed because it's Christmas time.
And that's the thing. When you look at what they have in that coaching staff, Pat Shurmur, but Mike Munchak is already there. So you know that offensive line is going to be tight and that running game is going to be legit.
Yeah, but and you talk about the offensive line, that's going to be a physical situation when we go against our defense because you know the Denver Broncos, their bread and butter is actually running the ball. I mean, if you look at the last 10 years, I know they had John Elway and they had, you know, Peyton Manning and all those guys, but their bread and butter is running the football. And if you look at, you know, why they're successful the times they went to the Super Bowl, it was because they ran the ball, and that's exactly what they're going to do this year.
And that offensive line is interesting because Juwan James, the Tennessee product, he opted out, and hey, more power to him. I will never question a player, taking health over playing the game. Never question that. But now you have Elijah Wilkinson, a guy who, let's face the facts, isn't the same level as Juwan James.
Yeah.
And then you have, you know, Garrett Bowles at left tackle. He's solid. Ooh. Lloyd Cushenberry, the rookie, starting at center. A rookie starting at center, how detrimental can that be for the running game?
I mean, I don't think it's bad because the one thing we got to understand, they're not going to start a rookie if he's not ready.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I'm saying, TD? If he's not ready, they're not going to, you know, put anybody in danger or put the offense in danger or put, you know, the quarterback in danger if this cat's not ready. You got to be something special. If you're a rookie in the league – and you're the starting center. Let's kind of break it down.
In this climate.
Yeah, and then the thing about it is, TD, you're a center. You got to make the calls. You got to set the front. You got to set the strength. You got to see who's coming on the blitz. That means you got to be a quarterback on the offensive line. So that just tells you that, you know, everybody talks about him being a rookie. He's not out there because he's just out there. He's out there because he knows exactly what he's doing.
Just to balance it out, though, do you think that could be an indictment on what they have as far as options are concerned to go at center?
I don't know. I mean, I think, too, if they didn't believe in him, they probably would have went out and got somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, because that we got to understand that's an important part of your offensive line. I mean, just imagine for the Tennessee Titans, we take out Ben Jones. Ben Jones is set in the front, setting the strength of the offensive line, looking where the pressures are coming from. That's a hard position. So they're not going to put a guy out there if they don't believe in him. And I think the Denver Broncos really, really believe in him.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And you mentioned Ben Jones. He's a guy that Mike Vrabel has said was the glue. I remember asking him about that offensive line. He said that was the glue that held everything together. So excellent point there. Let's flip it, right?
Sure.
Other side of the ball, the Denver Broncos, they have, and Elijah as well, we both are very high on Justin Simmons and what he does. I actually just got off the presser with him, and he talked a little bit about Derrick Henry. And he actually said that Henry's stiff arm is the best in the business. He said that the only way you stop a guy like him is rallying to the football. But then you have Kareem Jackson as well. He does an excellent job of coming down in the box. Both safeties do that. Mm-hmm. When that happens, how does that impact the opportunities? Because like I did a whiteboard Wednesday, and I drew up play action and how they could, you know, show the Broncos what they want with that outside run, but boot to the opposite side off of it. So how does that threat of that running game, especially with Derrick Henry, impact the safeties when they drop up?
You know, TD, it's huge, man, because, you know, especially as when you're talking about those safeties, all we need the safety to do is stay on the spot. When I say stay on the spot, is you got to catch them flat-footed. And when you catch them flat-footed and they're peeking in the backfield, who's going to go over top? A.J. Brown, Corey Davis. So I just think that what we got to do is, just like we said, we got to definitely run the ball to really have those safeties come up, and we got to take our shots. This is where A.J. Brown's got to come into play. This is where Corey Davis has got to play. And we've been talking about this cat named Khalif Raymond. Who's this guy?
Mm-hmm.
You don't think he's going to take the top off the defense if those safeties start playing a whole bunch in the box, coming down and trying to stop the run? You don't think we should take some shots, boss?
Hey,
take some shots.
Listen, I drew that up, and it's on Twitter if you guys want to and girls want to check it out. I posted it. It's a two-part because it's a two minutes and 50-something seconds. Couldn't post it in one video.
Right.
But I said that should be the first play that they do.
You got to. But let me ask you a question. All right, let's just break it down. We receivers, right? If we go in a 22 personnel, that's two backs, two tight ends, one wide receiver, who's that wide receiver that's going to go get it?
You know, honestly,
I know where you're going.
I've seen him have 14 in the game in that situation.
And the thing about it is TD, it's not just in a situation, in a clutch situation.
Right.
Remember when they played the Indianapolis Colts?
Yes, sir.
Who's in the game? This is
14.
This is crucial. 14's in the game. Why? Because they don't think you're going to pass it to him. And guess what? Let me run by you. Another crucial situation. They were playing. I think was it the Texans? I can't remember. Where I think they went 22 personnel, and he caught a long pass.
It was the Chiefs.
Chiefs, there you
Week
go.
Week 10 Chiefs. Week 10. Yeah.
See, that's what I'm saying, because when you get in the personnel, 22 personnel, what do you think the defense is thinking?
They're going bigger.
And then you got a wide receiver that nobody's heard of, they don't know anything about, and he goes, what does he do? He takes the top off the defense, touchdown, let's go eat.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I think it really does impact what you're able to do play action wise. You mentioned the altitude, right? You know, that's something that's clearly tough. I mean, we talked about that before we jumped into the segment. How do you see Derrick Henry being able to handle that altitude? Because, you know, last year, week 6, they held him to 28 rushing yards. No other team did as good of a job against Derrick Henry.
But you know what I'm concerned about, TD, and you talked about the altitude, and we're talking about this off the air, is this is where the importance of practicing and having OTAs and having camp comes into play. Because you got to be in shape. And I'm not saying Derrick Henry's not in shape, because we saw his videos with his shirt off looking like a beast, running up hills and all that.
Looking like the Predator.
But it's a totally different being in shape. He's in shape running, but you got to be in football shape. And when I say in football shape, you got to take the pounder. You got to control your breathing. You got to do all those things to overcome the altitude. Listen, I'm from Denver, Colorado. I grew up there for 18 years. I got drafted by – I went to The Ohio State University, got drafted by the Houston Oilers. I came back 4 years later. I walked up the stairs. It felt like I swallowed a cigarette, man. My heart was beating so bad. So that's going to come into play. So if Derrick Henry gets a little tired, who's going to be the backup running back if my man from Appalachian State hasn't been practicing? What do you do? That concerns me.
Well, according to what the Titans have done, Kari Blasengame is definitely an option.
That's a good point.
They seem to be confident that Darrington Evans is going to be able to go. And Jeremy McNichols, that's another thing this year. McNichols, they used him as one of the four protected players on the practice squad this week. And that means that if another team tries to claim him, they can't do that. He's protected from that. But more importantly, what they do on Saturday or Sunday for Monday is going to tell a lot about where Darrington Evans is, because they can activate a player. You could take a player and shuffle him up and down, practice squad to your active roster, back and forth, and there isn't a penalty like there was before, where it's like, you know, there's not as much of a risk. Mm-hmm. So that's something to definitely take note of.
I mean, it's going to be interesting, you know, and he hasn't been in camp for a long time.
Right.
But the key is, man, he's going to get thrown into the fire, because I'm telling you, it's a totally different monster when you're – and I know they played there last year, but it was totally different circumstances. They haven't practiced as much as they did last year. Mm-hmm. So now you're going into an environment with the altitude. And I know not too many fans are going to be there. That's not a factor. Maybe two fans, me and you, going to be there cheering. But that's going to come into play, TD, to where if he's not in football shape and something happens to Derrick Henry, what do you do?
Yeah.
So that's important.
They may have to spread it out and use Raymond Humphrey, go four wide, and go back to the days when, you know, Warren Moon was throwing to Curtis Duncan. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Heywood Jeffries and Ernest Givens and the crew.
I mean, you got to – but, you know, we got the weapons to do that. Don't forget that John New Smith cat, too. Now.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to be a big factor. You know what? I know we kind of got off subject a little bit, but I'm glad you brought up the passing game. I think our passing game is going to kill it this game.
I do too.
I think they're going to kick. Who are you going to cover?
Listen, let me tell you something. And in that video, I said the matchup of the AJs, advantage Titans.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, listen, I think A.J. Brown against A.J. Bouye.
No doubt.
No disrespect to Bouye, but that's advantage Titans.
Man, let's even go even further. Look at Humphreys. Humphreys should be big.
Oh,
I mean, he's been hurt a little last year, but when that joke was in the game, he made some good plays. One against the Indianapolis Colts, where he made a touchdown, and then also with the Kansas City Chiefs when the game is on the line.
Yes.
So the Titans got a lot of weapons, man, but the key is how you going to come out the gate. Are we going to start fast? Are we going to start slow? But the passing game came in absolutely a monster.
Yeah, and then just a quick look at the depth chart for the Broncos. Devontae Harris, I believe, is he and Duke Dawson. I remember both of those guys.
Yeah.
Those are solid guys as far as the nickel's concerned, mm-hmm. but hey, it's not going to work against Humphrey.
And then with Arthur Smith, come on, man. You don't think he's like a kid in the candy store when he got all these treats on the team?
He really is.
I mean, some dogs, man. I mean, you got fast, you got slow, you got big, you got Janu that can line up in the backfield like he did against the Saints. Come on, man. Let's do this, man.
There's a lot to do. So, listen, this is what you get, folks. This is every week. I mean, look, we're receivers, so we're going to have to talk about the passing game just a little bit. You know, we focus on the running game. This is what you get. So, Chris, man, I appreciate you. We'll definitely get back next week and make this happen once again.
Hey, man, before you go, man, since I hit a rap first, you got to end it with the beginning, with the end, bro.
You know what? I'm more of a comedian than a rapper, so I have to ask you this.
Sure.
Why do they call you Tippy?
Oh, there you go. Let's go to the next show, and we go into commercial, and that's a break.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byard, and I'm talking with TD.
Yes, yes, yes. John Denver, Rocky Mountain High. That's what the Titans are about to be on, a Rocky Mountain High as they go to Denver. So for that reason, we are going to bring in one of the OGs in this game, this reporting game, and that's Jeff Legwold, my fellow ESPN NFL Nation reporter. He covers the Broncos. Jeff, what's going on, man?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I thought you would enjoy that music a little bit.
We got legal weed. That's what it means a lot more now than it used to.
Oh, man, you caught me by surprise with that one. So let me get the laughs out of the way and get right into it, man, because obviously, you know, Jarrell Casey coming to the Broncos, that's no laughing matter. You had an awesome post, by the way, on that. So your interaction with Jarrell, or just what you've gotten to see from him, what's your feedback?
Well, you know, that's like found money to these guys. I mean, in their minds, they traded a seventh-round pick for a walk-in Pro Bowl-level player. So, I mean, he's been phenomenal. He's already active in the community. He's been one of their leading voices in the team's social justice initiatives, and that's even beyond how good he's looked on the field. And you know, I've told folks I look forward to seeing a Titans team that has 53 players better than him. So I mean, he's been very good this camp. You know, he looks healthy. I think he fits what they do schematically. I mean, Vic Fangio has found him a spot up front in the defensive line, and you know, Jarrell says he's doing things he likes to do on the field. So he's a great fit. You know, obviously the chemistry has changed in the last 36 hours or so with Von Miller's injury. So the fact Miller is probably out for the season, you know, changes the dynamic a lot here. But as far as Casey, they'd be in a lot more trouble if they had not gotten him. I think they feel like they can at least do some things to try and cover as much as they can for not having Miller in the defense.
You know that locker room as well as anyone. So when you look at Von Miller and him not being there, how big of a hit is that? We know what it is on the field, but within that building, how big of a hit is it for the Broncos?
You're exactly right. This is enormous. I think Drew Lock called it a gut punch.
Yeah.
He's the longest tenured Bronco on this roster. You know, it's going to be his 10th year. You know, he's an eight-time Pro Bowler. He's an all-decade, first-team all-decade selection. He's been a Super Bowl MVP. He put a ring on Peyton Manning's finger to send him into retirement. Mm-hmm. And you can't really express what that means to a franchise. I mean, there's something in sports. When you are a guy who has risen to the ultimate occasion and essentially pushed your team over the top for a championship, you are in a special place. And here, you know, that's a short list. You know, it's Elway, it's Terrell Davis, and it's Vaughn, really. I mean, that's the list you're talking about. So yeah, I think they will be helped somewhat that he'll be around the team, at least after he gets his ankle taken care of. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, you know, COVID has changed the dynamic because they've had to split the locker room anyway. You know, you don't have the traditional everybody's in there together moments this year. You know, they don't meet as a team, really. And they don't all eat in the cafeteria at the same time. You know, there's restrictions with that. So it is a different dynamic, but he was doing his best to sort of keep everybody together. So that's what they'll miss
Oh, go ahead.
No, just that portion of it. You know, Vaughn has always prided himself about being a guy who brings his teammates together. I mean, he's essentially made part of his house a place for people to, you know, rookies to come and hang out, you know, just to be together. You know, they can come use his workout room and all this stuff. I mean, this is a big role of his with the team, and you know that beyond all that he can do on the field, that is a big part of winning, is having someone who fuses people together.
Without a doubt. And I thought it was pretty cool what Drew Lock said when he mentioned how he got in there and he was starry-eyed, but Von Miller came up to him and spoke. And he said that that kind of set the tone for how he will treat the rookies this year. And that actually gives a perfect transition into what I want to get into, because you got two rookies, right, in K.J. Hamler and Jerry Jeudy. So I have to ask you, how has that passing game looked with Drew Lock connecting with those guys?
Well, you know, we'd all be lying if we said it was just smooth as silk. You know, I think at times they've shown there was no off-season work on the field. You know, you can only do so much in Zoom meetings with this. And, if they play a formation, a three-wide formation with Jeudy and Hamler, their entire offense will average 24 years old. I'm not sure I've ever seen that in my time covering the league. That's phenomenally young for an offense. And, you know, that will be a challenge. Now, that said, Jeudy is it. He's got it. I mean, that guy is going to come in and contribute. It's just going to be a matter of, can they get him the ball? You know, his routes are precise. He is all ball all the time. I mean, I have veteran players telling me they think they're getting there early and Jeudy's already in the building. So, I mean, he's got all the things that older players like to see. And, I mean, you know how it goes, man. They don't like flipping compliments to the rookie's way, but Jeudy broke the mold on that, man. They've done nothing but praise him for what he's done so far. Hamler's been hurt, so we haven't seen a lot of him. He's been on the field this week, so I think he will play Monday, at least a little bit in that slot area. But they're super young, and it may take a minute for them to find a groove.
Yeah, I believe Hamler was the hamstring, correct?
Yeah. No, yeah. It was something he even had before the combine. I mean, he didn't run at the combine because he hurt it way back in January. So, and, you know, here you don't hear a lot about it, but there is a thing with the altitude here. It dries you out. So a lot of guys do, if they're not careful and if they don't drink a ton of water and other stuff, you know, when they get here, they can have pulls at times. You know, Mark Barron got here a week ago, and he's already out of practice with a hamstring pull. So it does happen here a little bit if guys aren't careful, and I think it got Hamler a little bit.
Interesting. Another rookie I want to get into, and we're talking to Jeff Legwold, ESPN NFL Nation reporter, covering the Denver Broncos, an OG of the game. We have to get that in there. I want to get into Lloyd Cushenberry, and obviously he's a rookie, but, man, he's a center. Like, that's pretty outstanding that you have a rookie, especially in these conditions, starting at a position like center.
Yeah, it's pretty funny, Tron, because they tried to play it like the decision hadn't been made, and every day he would just take all the reps at center with the starting offense. And so they did this little dance in public that, you know, somehow Lloyd Cushenberry wasn't going to win the center job, but that was a no-brainer. Really good player. You know, I think what helped him the most, having seen some other centers come in and try this over the years, I think what helped him is, you know, LSU essentially ran the Saints playbook last year. You know, awful lot of that passing game is directly from the Saints and Sean Payton. I mean, a lot of the route combinations, a lot of the, you know, the checks and the reads for the quarterback, even the guys up front, a lot of that was the pro game already. So he had blocked 5-on-4 and 5-on-5, you know, far more than a lot of other college linemen have in the passing game. And he did it against, you know, the best D linemen, you know, in the country, essentially, week to week. So he was a lot more prepared for that job than a lot of guys would have been. And I think when they picked him, they thought immediately after turning the card in, you know, we're picking the starting center for next season and maybe, you know, like 10 more beyond that.
That's a valid pick right there. What about, because you touched on Von Miller being out, Bradley Chubb, from what I understand, he'll be on a pitch count. So what can be expected of this outside linebacker group, you know, on Monday Night Football?
Yeah, I think they're going to have to take more chances than they would have before. You know, I think if Vaughn and Chubb are lined up, you can play it straight. You know, you can rush four and have at it. I think they're going to have to take more chances and mix and match a little bit more than they would have maybe liked, at least out of the gate. So, you know, because anytime you take a chance in the rush, you're opening yourself up to, you know, you're banking the quarterback isn't going to find the hole, because there's always one. You know, you always got to leave a hole. It's just a matter of, do you get the quarterback before he finds it? So I think that will be the difference for people there watching the game, is I think you will see the Broncos defense take a few more chances than they would have if Miller was in the lineup. And they're going to have to, you know, and big key to that is, you know, what do you do with Henry on the early downs? You know, if it's third and two, they can call whatever they want, you know, and then you can't really be aggressive in the rush. So they got to, you know, from the Broncos' perspective, they got to somehow keep it in working down and distance if they're going to be able to rush the passer at all.
You know, another guy I'm looking forward to seeing, because I really enjoyed watching him at Iowa, is Josie Jewell. I want to see how he fits in there. I know Davis is gone, but, you know, I think he's someone that could help out. But I want to get into the secondary because, you know, my producer, Elijah, and I, we you know, really, really appreciate what Justin Simmons does. I think he's an awesome player, a top three safety in this league. But when you look at that tandem, Simmons and Kareem Jackson, well, what do you think of those guys? How have you seen them be able to impact?
Yeah, Tron, they may be the two of the smartest safeties I've been around. I mean, they are smart. Those guys are smart. And they study. They know what's coming. They know where they're supposed to be. And Jackson brings that edge, you know, with him. He plays with that, you know, this year there's no fans at training camp, you know, anywhere. And the voice you heard 98% of the time at Broncos practice was Kareem Jackson, just chirping all the time. I mean, he is always on point. You know, he doesn't take it. There's no, like, off days. They even gave him a rest day at one point, and he still didn't stop talking. He was the whole time. So he's kind of the guy who gets him going when Bond's, you know, not in there. So, you know, but those two, they allow Fangio to do what he wants, which is to play a lot of combination coverages. One real big item in a Fangio defense is he likes to force the quarterback to put the ball where he predicts he will put it, just by what he shows the quarterback, the alignment, how he plays the guys. He is trying to force the quarterback to make the read he wants. And it works a lot, but you can only do that if your safeties are on the money in their assignments. You know, you can't have guys blowing assignments every fourth play if you're going to try to play that way. And, you know, that's why it's tough to play his defenses. You know, not every defensive back can do it, and he needs a good safety. You know, he had Eddie Jackson in Chicago, and he's got these two guys here. So it's a requirement for him to do what he wants to do.
Yeah, well, I would ask you for a prediction, but you know what? You're going to have to go to ESPN.com to get both of our predictions. That, folks, is a teaser. Jeff, I appreciate
it.
That's it, man. I hate that I'm not going to be able to catch up with you at the game on Monday, but, you know, I'm sure you'll be watching for both of us, that all 22 perspective. I'll be on the TV, but, hey, we'll make it work.
You know, Tron, there's only so much of me people can stand anyway. So you're probably a good, in better shape being at home.
All right, man. I'll let you tell it. I disagree, but it's all good. I appreciate you coming on, and we'll definitely be in touch again in the near future. I know that draft, that's always something that we get to work together on too. So we'll see what happens.
My pleasure. Anytime, man.
Really appreciate Jeff Legwald joining. Always a pleasure to talk to him. I tell you, this is going to be a great season, right? And we're going to reintroduce some of the things that we did last year on Talking with TD. But also, on ESPN.com, the Titans page, I have what's called Whiteboard Wednesdays. So every Wednesday, I'm going to break down something on the whiteboard from the upcoming game for the Titans. So make sure you stay tuned for that. You know, ESPN.com, Titans, subscribe for me. But before we get you out of there, I want to, as I said, bring back something from last year. Hey, Elijah, let me get some music, please.
Blow the whistle. Blow the whistle.
Yeah. Blow the whistle. All right, that's it right there. Blow the whistle, too short. Every week, I am going to blow the whistle on something in regards to the Titans, in regards to the NFL, mostly with the Titans. I've blown the whistle on Mike Vrabel. I've blown the whistle on players. Hey, listen, man, nobody is safe. So that being said, this week I'm blowing the whistle on Mother Nature, man. 100 degrees on Sunday, snowstorms on Tuesday, 88 degrees on Saturday in Denver. That's crazy.
I will never complain about Tennessee weather ever again. Okay, actually, I will. I will continue to complain. All However, that's the epitome of some bipolar Mother Nature.
That's I'm blowing the whistle on Mother Nature because, daggone it, that darn snowstorm forced the Broncos inside, and, man, Von Miller got hurt on the last play of practice. The last play. I hate to see that, right? And especially for a guy who's been in the game for so long, Von Miller, you know, and at the pinnacle. But it is what it is, man. You got to deal with the cards that are handed to you. And obviously, Mother Nature handed us a bad stack. Well, handed Denver a bad stack. Mm-hmm. I can't complain. The weather's been nice here. But I also blow the whistle on Mother Nature with that daggone sky in San Francisco. I'm not going to get too far into that. But, man, that made my eyes open up seeing things look like that. But, hey, that's the show. Make sure you tune in to Nate and TD on Fridays at 6 p.m. That's another one that's going to be a banger for you this year. I appreciate each and every – look, I'm getting emotional. I appreciate – just kidding. Each and every one of you guys for tuning in. Thank you for the support. God bless and good night.